Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Keith Caulfield, and I am the co-director of charts at Billboard, based in Los Angeles. Joining me on the other line in New York, returning to the podcast, is OG pop shopper and Billboard music editor Jason Lipschitz. Hello, Jason.
Woo! What's up, man?
How are you?
I'm great. I'm back on the Pop Shop. This is wild.
Is it weird?
So it's very strange. It feels
so long
like
ago. You said you were going to go away, and then you came back.
I know, and now I'm back, and it's like I never left. It's me and you, and 3,000 miles away, but talking to each other.
Just like old times. Aww.
Exactly.
Well, Jason's going to be here with us for the next few months, filling in for the absent Katie Atkinson, who was on maternity leave, and she has a fabulous, beautiful baby now.
Yeah, shout out to Katie. First of all, congrats to Katie because she's a new mom, which is awesome. And second of all, just shout out to her because she's been an amazing co-host of Pop Shop Podcast. I've still been listening, of course. And yeah, you guys do it. You guys do it every week, and I love it every week. So shout out to her.
Well, it's the show that you started, Jason. So thank you. That's high praise.
No. Thank you.
Okay. Well, as always, the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop.
Today on the show, Keith,
yes?
We've got news about Taylor Swift's social media blackout, what it all means, and also going to talk about my experience at the Hot 100 Festival, which was this past weekend, and a preview of this Sunday's MTV Video Music Awards.
Well, exciting things to talk about.
Yeah.
Plus, we've got chart news about how Kesha gets her second number one album on the Billboard 200 chart, how Despacito inches ever closer to the all-time record for the most weeks at number one on the Billboard Hot 100, and how Khalid's American Teen album reaches the top five of the Billboard 200 for the first time 6 months after its release. In addition to all that, we also have an interview with our pal Darren Criss. We chatted with Darren on the phone recently to talk about Elsie Fest, his annual festival in New York that celebrates the music and stars of stage and screen. He'll be headlining the show along with Lea Michele and Alan Cumming, and the event will take place in Central Park on October 8th. So stick around for our interview with Darren a little later in the show.
It's going to be awesome. Before we get started, Keith.
Yeah.
Some quick housekeeping notes. Remember how I used to do
housekeeping
that?
Notes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. If you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on iTunes so you never, ever, 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 ever miss an episode. Give us a rating or review while you're at it. It makes our hearts sing and fills our eyes with tears of joy. If you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit iTunes.com/billboardpodcasts.
You know what we forgot, Jason?
What's that?
I'm the what to your what this week.
Oh, yeah.
I'm the vanilla to your Millie.
Next week, that we'll have to bring it out of the mothballs. Next week,
it's all coming back to you now.
I know,
all these things.
It really is like muscle memory.
You missed it, didn't you?
But all right, man. Well, we got to get to it. It's time to get to the Pop Shop Podcast. Let's hit three of the biggest headlines over on Billboard.com right now. Before we get to the charts, let's talk about some news. Okay, first of all, everybody in the office today and probably this week is talking about Taylor Swift and for good reason.
And the eclipse.
And the eclipse. It was touch and go that like the eclipse was going to be timed to a Taylor Swift release, but no, it was not. She's setting up something though. Late last week, she commenced a social media blackout that had fans wondering what the pop superstar was up to. And then, a few days later, we're sitting here we're recording this on Monday afternoon. We are still wondering what the heck's going on, even though we have at least a 10-second video clip of what appears to be a slithering snake tail.
I think it could be like a dragon tail, because it looks too scaly to be a snake.
Man, it could be Game of Thrones. It could be a shout-out to Game of Thrones.
Could be a Game of Thrones preview.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be so cool.
Maybe she was behind the leak, that stole the Game of Thrones episodes from HBO.
Oh, wow.
Probably not.
Probably not. So she shared that on Monday without any comment. People thought there was a new single dropping right around the eclipse time, and it did not happen. But by the time you're listening to this, maybe TS6, the new era, has commenced. I don't know.
By the time you hear this, her album could have dropped for all we know.
Yeah, exactly. And this will sound very dated, but right now we don't have anything else with Taylor's team remaining mum. All we can do is keep listening to 1989 over and over and over. So Keith, I mean, one of the things we talked about when I was on Pop Shop many, many moons ago was many moons ago was the fact that Taylor loves to release lead singles in August and albums in October. And guess what month it is, man? It's August.
Like, she's a year late, though, and she used to do this every 2 years, right?
I know.
She, I guess 1989 was just so big, she didn't want to do it last August, so.
Yeah. Took the year off.
It's about time. And so many questions.
At this point, it would be strange. Here's how I feel. At this point, it would be strange to me if she did not release new music with all this. With the social media blackout, with this cryptic 10-second video teaser. I mean, if this is not new music, I'd be definitely pretty surprised, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think. There was someone who did something similar earlier this year where people got really excited because they teased something, and now I'm totally drawing a blank.
Yeah, so I guess we'll see. I mean, fall time is typically her time. She's released albums in 2010, 2012, 2014, all, like I said, in October. All selling a million albums plus in their first weeks of release. Speak Now, Red, 1989.
And each one got bigger in their first week, too.
What's your favorite Taylor Swift album, Keith?
Oh, boy. You know, I'm going to just go ahead and say 1989.
That's
just
fair.
Because I think I'm more of a fan of pop Taylor,
yep,
than country Taylor. And I really didn't really come around to Taylor properly until, the Max Martin stuff, yeah, on the album before that.
That's fair. So Hot 100 Fest happened this past weekend, 2017 Hot 100 Fest. I was there. The major highlight was Major Lazer headlining the final night of the third annual pop music extravaganza. And what's cool about this, and I'll get to the details in a second, but you know, there's a ton of music festivals, obviously, across North America over the summer and you know, in the spring and fall, extending into those.
Just a few.
But there aren't that many that are just really pop music. And this was, as a lover of pop music, I mean, you had Major Lazer, you had Camilla, you had T-Pain and Rick Ross and DJ Khaled playing all of his huge number ones, and Zedd. And, you know, it was a real celebration of mainstream music. And I enjoyed it, man. It was really great. Thanks to everybody who came out. It was very cool seeing so many people on stage. Shout out Billboard. So many fans in attendance enjoying a Billboard event. So thanks, guys. That was very cool.
It's so cool. We have our own award show. We've got our own music festival.
Yeah.
How awesome is that?
It's very
cool,
man.
We work for a cool place.
We do. We're very lucky. Anyway, lastly, my man, VMAs this weekend, the 2017 MTV Video Music Awards, are taking place this weekend in your beloved Los Angeles.
Indeed.
Keith.
Down the street, in fact. Well, not really. But yeah.
Miley Cyrus, Kendrick Lamar, Ed Sheeran all performing, Shawn Mendes, Lorde, The Weeknd, 30 Seconds to Mars, and this year's host, Katy Perry, also performing. Video of the Year nominees include Kendrick Lamar's Humble, Bruno Mars's 24 Karat Magic, Alessia Cara's Scars, You're Beautiful, DJ Khaled's Wild Thoughts, and The Weeknd's Reminder. I mean, if you looking at these five videos, I feel like it's got to be Humble. Like,
yeah,
that's got to,
like,
be the one to beat.
Yeah, there's no way anyone else is winning aside from Kendrick.
Yeah. We've been talking in the office over the past couple weeks about how it definitely feels like a weaker year for big music videos. If you think about last year with Hotline Bling and Adele's Hello and Formation, and you know, you had these videos that you can immediately recall, like just kind of, you know, either iconic or one step short of iconic, at least very, very memorable. This year, I don't know. I mean, Humble's up there, but I don't know. How do you feel, man?
I mean, I feel like I mean, I feel like if maybe like Logic's video, which just came out like 5 or 6 days ago, had come out earlier, it would have been like in contention. I mean, I don't think it's nominated for anything, so there's one. I mean, it feels like we're, I mean, when I saw that the nominations had come out and I looked, I'm like, this is a pretty weak field.
Yeah.
I mean, like, no offense, but I'm like, 24 Karat Magic? Really?
Yeah.
Like, one of the five best videos of the year? I don't know.
Have you seen the Wild Thoughts video? It's just DJ Khaled and Rihanna and Bryson Tiller just kind of dancing at a party, which is fine. Yeah. Look, that sounds like an awesome party.
Which
but,
is
yeah.
fine, but is that one of the five best videos of the year? I know that when I, and certainly Jason, but Jason's a little bit younger than I am, when I was a younger lad, I remember how the nominations for the VMAs in their golden era, you know, which is basically like, you know, sort of 89 to like 2000, you know, was, I mean, it was a big deal. Like,
yeah.
to be, and it was like, there was like some seriously amazing videos that were in contention. Like, yeah, sometimes you get like a weird fluke thing that was just like, just the sheer popularity of it, like willed it into the contention. But I'm like, I don't know. It just feels like it's sort of a kind of a weakish year when it comes to music videos. But, you know, we say that now, and then in 2 weeks from now, there could be like three amazing new videos from like, you know, Taylor and Beyonce and Katy Perry or something.
Yeah, I definitely remember, like, that's the cool thing about the VMAs to me is just the, you know, the videos. I don't really pore over the other categories, but you remember the video of the year for, you know, for the most part. I just remember like listening, or I remember one of the ones I first remember was the year Jamiroquai Virtual Insanity was video of the year, and I was just like, man, like I just remember watching that in the months leading up to it and blown away by it, and he performed, and shout out to Jamiroquai, I guess. I think something that got snubbed from video of the year, T-shirt by Migos. I love that video. Oh my goodness. Shout out to Migos as well. Anyway, so there you go. Those are the three things we're talking about here at Billboard.com. Taylor Swift, Hot 100 Fest, recap, VMAs coming up. Keith.
Well, yes. Yes.
You ready to get to the charts, man?
Sure, we can. Well, let's run the Billboard chart numbers and do the chart chat. Here are three of the biggest headlines on the charts. Number one, Kesha notches her second number one album on the Billboard 200 with Rainbow. Number two, Despacito is still number one on the Billboard Hot 100 for a 15th week. Could it overtake the all-time record for the most weeks at number one? We'll find out. Well, maybe we won't find out this week, but anyway. Number three, Khalid's American Teen album hits the top five on the Billboard 200 for the very first time, a long 6 months after it was released. All right, let's break down each of these individually. First up, Kesha scores her second number one album on the Billboard 200 chart as her new effort, Rainbow, debuts atop the list. The set earned 117,000 equivalent album units in the week ending August 17th, according to Nielsen Music. And of that sum, 90,000 were in traditional album sales. By the way, her album sales, like the sales of Katy Perry and Arcade Fire and the Chainsmokers earlier this year, were aided by a ticket album concert redemption bundle offer.
I didn't know that. That's cool.
So it's a very popular, trendy thing to do. Notably, Rainbow earns the second largest week of the year for an album by a woman, second only to the arrival of Katy Perry's Witness back in July. Kesha first led the list back in January of 2010, by the way, with her first album, Animal. So it's been over 7 years since she's been number one. It's been a moment since we've had Kesha and new music from Kesha. So welcome back, and welcome back with full force to the top of the charts. What do you think of the album, by the way, Jason?
You know, I really like it, and I wrote about this a couple weeks ago on Billboard.com. One of the things that really struck me about it is so many artists, so many pop artists, I should say, can't really figure out a second act, and they break big with a particular sound, and they struggle to experiment and find different lanes and figure out how to get past that initial sound instead of just duplicating themselves over and over. But you know, what's really remarkable about this album is it goes in so many different directions, and some are more successful than others, but I just the fact that she has that kind of that range was not, first of all, like I'm a Kesha fan. I did not expect that whatsoever, just in terms of how much ground she covers on this album. With she has rock songs, she has a country duet with Dolly Parton, she has like more traditional pop songs, she has piano ballads. Like she does a ton of different styles on this album, but you still get a sense of who she is and where she's at. I think even more kind of remarkable, and just as remarkable I should say, as the album is the fact that this is number one. And you know, if you compare it to her past two albums, you had a huge first single with TikTok for Animal, and then Warrior in 2012 had a huge first single with Die Young. I mean, Praying's done pretty well, but it's definitely a less traditional, less radio friendly song than those two songs. And this, you know, it's a big launch. I just feel like people are rooting for Kesha. I gotta be honest, man. This is like a feel good story to me. This number one debut.
Well, I think it is, and yay Kesha. I got nothing else to add. I'm just like, just go her. Okay, next up, Luis Fonsi and Daddy Yankee's Despacito, featuring Justin Bieber, of course, is still number one on the Billboard Hot 100 for a 15th week. It is just 1 week away from tying the all-time record for the most weeks at number one, set when Mariah Carey and Boyz II Men's One Sweet Day racked up 16 sweet, sweet weeks atop the list in 1995 and 1996. Jason, do you think Despacito is going to do it?
You know, so it's 2 weeks away from setting the record. It's 1 week away from tying the record.
Yeah.
Here's my prediction, man, and I'll be on this lovely podcast for the next few weeks, so people can call me out. I'll be accountable. My prediction is that it ties the record but does not set the record. That is my prediction.
Mm.
And I don't know.
Why?
I don't know if something, you know, if Taylor Swift is teasing something, that would come out this week.
Again, by the time you hear this, she could have a new single.
That's true. Exactly. And you know, I mean, you're the chart whiz. Do you think?
Yeah, I'm like, a little bit closer to this, I suppose.
Yeah. So my question to you is, and I don't know if you're about to get to it, but you know, streaking up the chart at number three this week is Cardi B.
Yeah.
And I know that song doesn't have any kind of anywhere near the radio play that Despacito does. By the way, I love how you've been saying Despacito. You have a little like little spice on it. I love
Despacito.
It.
Despacito.
Yes, it's over and over, man.
Is it annoying? Is that what you're saying?
No, I love it. I love okay. it. Every time you do it, I'm like, yeah, get into it.
Yeah, man.
But I mean, it doesn't have anywhere near that kind of radio traction right now. But
no.
But it's just been climbing, and I don't know. What do you think?
Here's what's going on. So I was looking, and I think Gary mentioned this in his story. Gary Trust, who is the other co-director of charts, and he also manages the Hot 100 chart. I think he wrote this in his story. It looks like if Despacito loses the same number of points on the chart next week as it did this week, and if Wild Thoughts, which is number two by DJ Khaled on the chart this week, and if Wild Thoughts gains the same number of points that it did this week, Wild Thoughts could be number one next week.
Wow.
However, not all things are always equal from week to week. You know, Wild Thoughts was 69 cents, so we could go, I don't think Despacito was, and now Despacito is on sale for 69 cents in the iTunes store. So does that necessarily mean that Wild Thoughts will continue at the same rate? No, nothing is equal from week to week. We can't just automatically assume that these points will just automatically be the same sort of acceleration or deceleration next week. With regards to Cardi B, she's still kind of a good chunk behind, so it looks like she could be a contender for number one in a few weeks. Then again, Taylor Swift could have a new song by the time you hear this, and she could be number one next week. Boom. So
you know what, man? More than anything, like it's just an exciting story. We've been, obviously, because we work at Billboard, we've been talking about this for weeks and weeks now, but you know, now it's the second. Only one other song has been number one for 15 weeks and ever, and it's an exciting thing. I don't know if do you feel that way as well?
Yes, and yes. It's just
the rare yes and yes.
well, anyone listening to the show will know that I become exasperated with songs that are number one for like 8 years on the Hot 100.
It's true.
It's just, it's like, let someone else have a chance at number one, kids. Like, does it, literally in the past year we've had, it seems like we've had about three number one singles.
Yeah.
It's been like the Chainsmokers, Ed Sheeran, and Despacito. Even though I know like a Bad and Bougie got in there and a Bruno Mars got in there for like a week, still effectively it's been three songs for like the past year. Yeah. I'm like, good Lord. But anyway, stay tuned. Next week, Despacito may tie the record, and the week after that, it could be the all-time longest number one with 17 weeks at number one. Who knows? Last thing in terms of chart chat this week. Rising R&B star Khalid hits the top five on the Billboard 200 for the very first time as his album American Teen vaults from number 10 to number 4 with 32,000 equivalent album units earned last week. The set debuted and initially peaked at number 9 6 months ago, but the album has stayed relatively consistent week after week, hanging out in the top 25 ever since. The gain this week was caused partially by sale pricing and promotion in the iTunes store, as the album was sale priced for $5.99, but the album also continues to be a favorite on streaming services and has been very consistent in its popularity with streamers. This is not on our notes, but Jason, are you a fan of Khalid? I feel like he's like one of the new artists to watch this year.
Yeah, I absolutely think so. I actually saw him. I've seen him live once, and it was in your native LA. He played a show, I think, at the Roxy. He played like an underplay, and
like, you didn't tell us that you were here for this. You just showed up.
No, it was during Grammys week, actually.
Oh, okay.
So you did see me. I did.
We worked together at the Grammys.
No, I was there, and he's really magnetic, and he definitely has. I mean, the whole album is really strong, and you don't really see new artists have this kind of album traction that often. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but the fact that this is in the top 10 right now, and I don't think he necessarily has the kind of household name recognition yet, but I think he's kind of well on his way. He seems, you know, people really, really like this kid, and he, you know, he's working with Calvin Harris, and the location has been a huge hit, and
right.
I don't know. I mean, future is very, very bright for Khalid. I can definitely say that.
I was checking out his Twitter the other day, and I saw that he did a cover of Fleetwood Mac's Dreams.
No way. I did not know that.
He was just like him and some like acoustic guitarist backstage somewhere, and I was like, man, this is just beautiful.
I gotta check that out. I love Dreams.
All right. Well, now we are done with the news. We are done with the charts. Let's move on to our guest interview with Darren Criss.
Yeah.
All right. So I chatted with the singer-songwriter who is a frequent guest of the Pop Shop. He's a friend of the podcast. In fact, he's a former co-host of the podcast. He was a guest co-host.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. And he's been in New York. He's hung out with Jason and like done Jason's makeup once, which was a hoot.
I want to very quickly take 30 seconds to explain that. So he was in...
you don't like normally wear makeup? Is that what you're saying?
No, I first of all, I do not. But second of all, so he was in Hedwig, and we had the idea to have him like do a makeup tutorial on video. And so he came in, and everyone was like, oh, this is a great idea. He came in. He's like, hey, so, like, I don't do my own makeup. I don't really know how to do this. And I was like,
a great idea.
And I was like, all right, just do it anyway. So he just kind of messed around and created this kind of nightmarish looking thing on my face.
And so it was more of like Lady Gaga and applause and not Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Yeah, basically. But he's the nicest guy. So anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I
no, that's fine.
Shout out to Darren. I've given a lot of shout outs in my return.
Yeah.
But they're all warranted.
It's all right. Well, I chatted with Darren on the phone recently to discuss LC Fest, which is his music festival he started a couple years ago. Well, I mean, he co-created it with some other folks. The festival is now in its third year, and it celebrates the music and stars of stage and screen, and will take place on October 8th in Central Park. It's going to be in Central Park for the first time. The show will be co-headlined by Darren, along with Lea Michele. Of course, they worked together on Glee. And Alan Cumming, in fact, will be there. in our chat. Yeah, I mean, not just them. There will be other people, too, and you'll hear more about that in the interview. In our chat, Darren talks about some memorable moments from the first 2 years of LC Fest, what he looks for when booking artists for the show, and who's on his wish list for future LC Fest. And you might be surprised at some of the names that he mentions. So here's our interview with Darren Criss.
I dreamed a dream in time gone by, when hope was high and life worth living. I dream that love was...
Welcome back to the Billboard Pop Shop podcast. Darren Criss, how are you, sir?
I'm well, man. How many times have we done this? Is this number three for LC?
13. 13 times. Well,
we've done it 13 times.
Like, no, no. We've done it a few times. You're a friend of the podcast, our pal Darren.
Well, thank you for having me back.
Well, let's talk about LC Fest, your annual celebration of the stars and songs of stage and screen. You guys recently announced the headliners, which is you, Leah Michelle, and Alan Cumming, and you've already announced some special guests, including Jeremy Jordan and Ingrid Michaelson. What is it that you look for when you're booking talent for the show? Like, what's the perfect fit for this show?
Well, we'll take anybody. Please, just do our best. No, that's not true. I mean, it's sort of the alchemy of a lot of different things. You know, if you get somebody like Alan Cumming, then you kind of go from there. I mean, there's so many. Every year, people come up to me and go, "Oh, you know, you should have at your festival. You should have this person or that person," and as if it had never crossed my mind. There's a master list of hundreds and hundreds of people that we would love to have at LC. It just has to do with the timing on, you know, their part and our part, if it makes sense. I mean, there are certain people that we could have had this year that I was like, you know what, I feel like it might be better to have them next year. Or maybe they don't, that doesn't really fit with this other person that we have. So it's sort of this like Tetris game of a lot of different factors. I mean, At a very base level, to answer your question that you originally asked, is like what we're looking for is the main thing is to get sort of a good crossover between, you know, pop culture platforms. You know, it's not just Broadway, you know, TV, film, new media, internet, all that stuff. We like people that kind of have a bit of a relationship with all of them, and or at least to have a couple names that really do. At least in sort of the headline sphere, and then right. A lot of the other folks that we have, if they're more Broadway leaning or if they're more recording artist leaning, that's all good. It's as long as there's sort of the central tie between this love of musical theater. But Yeah, at the end of the day, it's just if you like musical theater, you can come and perform whatever you like.
Just show up. Just show up and sing.
Just show up.
Get the top hat and the cane. Well, go for it. Tap dance.
Well, I will say that the second part of that question is, you know, what are you looking for these people to do at LC? And I encourage all of them to do really whatever they want, and mainly to use this as an excuse to perform things they don't really get the chance to do. I really like it when, you know, if you have, you know, we had a great big Grammy Award winning, you know, Great Big World coming with us, and instead of me making them play one of their songs, I was like, let's do a cover of Beauty and the Beast. So we did a Tree of Beauty and the Beast. And then when you have somebody like Aaron Tveit, who's a TV and Broadway guy, who a lot of people who love him, you know, want to hear him sing stuff from Broadway, he sang songs like Taylor Swift songs, and that was a huge hit. So, you know, these aren't songs that they usually get the opportunity to do. There's no venue that would say, hey, would you mind doing this song or that song? They usually want to hear their hits. So, I really want it to be sort of a crossbreeding of a lot of different things that people kind of vaguely associate these people with, but they don't have a chance to kind of let that part of them shine.
Do you think, obviously I would imagine then that going into this year's show, which is the third show, with, you know, certainly you and Leah Michelle on the same bill together, that I was already thinking like, oh, well, I hope that Darren and Leah will sing together on stage. Is that something that you imagine could happen this year?
Of course. No, if it doesn't happen, not only do I think the audience would cry bloody murder, I'd scream bloody murder. I mean, that's the point, you know. Aside from, like I said, people doing songs they don't get an excuse to do, every year there's been collaborations of people that show up and do songs together. I mean, last year, Cynthia Erivo was a guest of ours, and she, you know, and Jason Robert Brown was one of our headliners. So, you know, she ended up singing a song from Last 5 Years with Jason, and that was connected to a larger concert they did later in the year together, which was amazing. She came on stage with Pasek and Paul, but now Tony and Oscar winning Pasek and Paul. She sang a song from what would be the hit musical Dear Evan Hansen. She sang the big song from that. So, you know, we have a lot of people. Ed and Rachel Wood came up and sang a song with me. We did a duet of Across the Universe. So, yeah, it's all about, you know, kind of having, you know, they have those duets at the Grammys where they pair this one person from one genre and another one for these sort of, like, you can only see it here moments. That's what we're all about. So, absolutely.
Yeah.
Although Lee and I have sung many times before, I think what we'll aim for is to do a song that no one has ever seen us do together. And so, yeah, it's I'm all about that. And I encourage the artists to get really excited about, like, you know, getting in contact with each other and think there's some kind of collaboration they can do with people on the lineup.
What's been, like, a personal highlight for you at LC Fest in the past? Like, you know, a particular memorable performance, or maybe something you just got to watch as opposed to being part of, because, you know, this is your baby. Like, you helped create this. You and some other folks have created this really cool event. What has been a really memorable moment for you? It doesn't have to be the number one moment, but just a personal,
you know,
memorable moment.
Gosh, I have a few. I guess from the first one, because this is a very young festival. I mean, we really have such a long way to go. So every year is such a huge learning curve, and we're just so happy that, you know, it gets somewhat pulled off and people, you know, no one's getting hurt, at least, you know, not physically.
That's good.
You know,
yeah.
emotional and mental scars aside, we're just like, thank God it kind of happened. So there was a moment where, I'm really proud of what has happened with some of our LC alum in the short period of time that we've been around. I've been really happy to see them realize their potential in the live music sphere. I think so many people, like the Leslie Odom Jr.'s and Aaron Tveit's of the world, are used to playing in New York Joe's Pub and 54 Below and lounge sort of cabaret venues. And I think for both of them, it was the first time they ever played to what can only be compared to sort of a rock festival vibe. Because I'm used to playing to, you know, low lighting and velvet seats, and to feel that as a performer, I think kind of gave them the confidence to go out, and they've done shows in more sort of mid-sized, typically rock associated venues. So seeing them go off and do their thing from that has been, I'm very proud of that. I'm proud that we were able to give them the venue, and the, perspective to know that that was something they could do, and they've done well since then. I have a very distinct memory of Aaron going on stage just like any other day. He's used to this. He's a seasoned performer, and kind of watching the curvature of his performance. But by the beginning, he was doing like, all right, let's do another cabaret act. And then by the end, there's a great picture of it even that we have in our press kit where he's looking back, at sort of people backstage and myself just with this face of like, oh my God, this is crazy. This is unlike anything I've ever experienced. And that's deeply satisfying for me. Obviously I'm hoping the fans get equally, as thrilling of an experience, but, I guess I almost take that for granted. I'm just so happy that the, artists have the same thrill that the, audience does. And it's the symbiotic relationship. You know, first thing you know, Aaron Tveit is suddenly feeling like a rock star, and then he performs like a rock star, and then the audience treats him like a rock star, and it's this sort of vicious cycle of everybody just feeling their best.
Right.
So that was a really special thing when people really rise to the occasion for this. It's not just some silly thing. Hey, can you just sing another concert? It's a unique event for both the audience and the performers, and to see that happen on their face is really special.
To wrap up, I'm sure everyone asked this, but I will too. Hey, who is on your ultimate wish list for LC Fest? And before you answer that, I will say, like, you know, in some weird sort of alternate universe, and this could certainly happen, you never know, are we thinking like a Barbra Streisand, Lin-Manuel Miranda, Audra McDonald, like triple bill sort of thing? Or,
yeah,
you know,
I mean,
am I aiming too high?
No. I mean, that would be amazing. I mean, there's so many people that I'm usually very reluctant to answer that question because I don't want to say like it's good to talk about because there's obvious huge stars that we'd be so lucky to have that quite frankly we can't afford, not only monetarily but just like cachet wise. It's like hey, do you want to play this little thing? It's like they got nothing to gain from that, and I don't hold that against them. So there are a number of people that are sort of folks, some of the folks you just mentioned that certainly I hope to have in the future. But some of those folks you mentioned are very aware of the festival and have been very supportive, and we would love to have them. It's just, you know, we don't want to like insult them. but the reason why I was going to say I don't like saying specific names is because I don't want to throw under the bus the people we do have who we're so lucky to get and who are so wonderful in their own right. But I do like to answer this question with people that people don't necessarily think of. I think they're always thinking about performers, but I like to tell and make very apparent that there are so many people connected to the Broadway community that we forget, like superstars, not just the Barbra Streisands of the world. And, you know, don't forget, like Green Day, The Who, Sting. These are all massive festival acts that, you know, have Broadway stints and have a life in Broadway. So, you know, even though that seems a far way off, I like putting people's heads in that box because I like Elsie ultimately being a place where you can see all these different people in this is the only lineup where you would see all those names, where you'd see a Barbra Streisand and a Billy Joe Armstrong. You're like, what do they have to do together? Well, they both have a love for Broadway and they both have a deep connection to it. And that's so cool because nowadays where the lines of genres are dissolving more and more, you know, that there's a coolness to that. There's like an, oh my God, I can't believe that I get to see these two acts in the same place. Cause at the end of the day, if you're a fan, you're a fan. If you like cool music, you know, Barbra is really cool. Green Day is really cool. And to be able to see them on the same stage would be so outrageous. So who knows? I'll tell you one person who I'd love to have that I'd be so lucky is Carol King. That'd be my dream one day.
I'm still stuck on the Green Day thing. I wasn't even thinking that way. And I'm like, no, that makes nobody total
does.
Sense.
But,
like,
but that's where my head's at, you know. And David Byrne has written musicals, and Fatboy Slim is collaborated with him. And there's just so many fantastic artists. That, and you know, Sheryl Crow was
Cyndi Lauper. I mean,
forever ago, Cyndi Lauper. It just goes on and on and on. So you know, that's the headspace that I want people to get into. It's not just Broadway performers that have ended up in TV and film. It's people from all walks of the superstar life. That's why I always hammer home that, to me, Elsie is really a pop culture cabaret. It's not just the Broadway thing. Because being a musical theater fan is so much more than just musical theater. It's about loving all the things that inspire it. And so that when you start looking at it from that way, you start realizing how huge of a spectrum this lineup can cover. And I hope to get some of those people in the next couple of years.
Well, we are at a really cool point in sort of pop culture and Broadway and music from shows where everything is sort of commingling with one another. And it's, you know, all the lines are blurred, and that makes it like really great for a show like this, which is like a once a year experience, and it brings together performers for a one time ever collaboration. So, you know, it's really exciting to see this sort of thing happen, and I'm really stoked for you and the team putting this show together, and I hope everyone gets to go and hang out in Central Park and see Darren and Leah and Alan and Jordan and everyone. So thank you so much for talking to me, Darren.
Thanks, dude. Should we do the old plug of all the information? If you want to go check out more things about Elsie, you can go to elsiefest.com and follow us on social media, because we will definitely be announcing a lot more guest stars as the month progress, but you can get tickets on Ticketfly. And, we hope to see you there. Like I said, if anything else, it's the most beautiful time of year to be in New York City. And it's a holiday weekend. So, come from far and wide.
Perfect combination. It's a holiday weekend. It's Central Park. The leaves might be changing or maybe not. I don't know. But that's it. So thank you so much, Darren.
You see, it's getting late. Oh, please don't hesitate. Put a little love in your heart. And the world will be a better place. And the world will be a better place for.
Thank you so much, Darren, for chatting with us. It's always lovely to speak to Darren. And If you can, go check out LC Fest in October and go to lcfest.com for all the information about who's playing and how you can get tickets and so much more.
You know what? I also, Keith, I should have mentioned this beforehand, but the song Every Single Night that he made with his brother as Computer Games. Love that song. That song is incredible.
And that's the one with the really like fun video where they're all like dressed up, right?
Yeah.
That one? That was a great one. And this week, by the time you've heard this, they'll have a new video out starring one of the kids from Stranger Things.
Ooh.
I forget which one. I think I want to say like the curly-haired one.
Oh, that's a good one.
I think. That's a good one. He's a good one, that kid. He's a good one. Anyway, well, now it's time. Jason, do you know what time it is?
I think I know, man. I think I know.
Did you want to say it?
All right, let's do it. You ready? And now it's time, Keith, for your chart stat of the week.
I don't actually do the doo-doo-doos anymore, but I just did it for you. This week in 1995, Seal got his one and only number one hit on the Billboard Hot 100 with Kiss from a Rose. The track topped the tally, dated August 26th, 1995, and spent just one single week at number one. The song was originally released on Seal's self-titled 1994 album, but found success after it was included on the Batman Forever soundtrack in 1995. I know this is one of Jason's favorite albums.
Yes.
The track became a huge radio hit. Actually, I don't really know that. I'm just guessing. Spending 10 weeks atop the radio songs chart that year. So even though it only spent one week at number one on the Hot 100, it was a huge airplay hit. Back in the mid-90s, the Hot 100 was a little bit weird, and sometimes you have a song that would only spend one week at number one because of crazy chart rules, but it was actually a huge airplay hit. This was one of those number
ones. They needed you. That's when you came riding in.
Well, no, I came riding in a couple years after that. I was still in college at this point. Fun fact, in 1995, there were a few Hot 100 number one hits from movie soundtracks. In addition to Kiss from a Rose, there was also Bryan Adams' Have You Ever Really Loved a Woman from Don Juan DeMarco, Coolio's Gangsta's Paradise featuring Elvie from Dangerous Minds, and Whitney Houston's Exhale, Shoop, Shoop from Waiting to Exhale. It was just a year full of number one hits from movies. Gee whiz.
Love Kiss from a Rose. You know, one of my memories of Kiss from a Rose, I don't know if you remember this, Keith, but it seemed like Seal performed Kiss from a Rose at every single award show for like a year and a half. It just
probably
seemed like, it seemed like every single, because I think he might have done it at like the Golden Globes or the, because it was a soundtrack. Once you have one of those big hits that was also on a soundtrack, you have it at the Golden Globes and the Oscars,
the
too.
The MTV Movie Awards, the Blockbuster Awards.
I just remember it was like eight times that Seal just performed that song, which was great. I love that song.
Well, so there you have it. This week in 1995, Seal topped the Hot 100 with Kiss from a Rose. All right, so we have reached the end of our fine show. This show ended up running much longer than we normally do, but it's
really?
It's a special occasion because Jason's back.
I'm just loquacious, man. What can I say? I'm excited to be back on the Pop Shop.
Do we have any parting words?
I'm happy to be back. Thank you guys for listening, and thank you, Keith, for keep on rocking on the Pop Shop.
Keep on popping in the pop world.
Yeah.
Do you know Neil Young won Video of the Year in 1989 at the MTV Awards?
Yeah, that was. It's funny to look back at the
this
videos
notes
of the year.
For you.
Yeah, that's so weird.
I believe it beat Like a Prayer by Madonna.
Oh man, dude, you got so close. I think was this the first mention of Madonna in the whole show? You got so close to making it.
Yeah. Through. Also, Madonna has one of my favorite VMA performances of all time when she did Express Yourself in 1989. She opened the show with Express Yourself. Same year that Janet, I believe. Nope. Janet didn't close the show. The very next year though, Janet opened the show with Black Cat and Madonna closed the show with Vogue.
Oh, man, that was a good year.
Yeah, see, back in the golden era of the VMAs. Anyway, what song should we go out on today?
I was thinking of a return song for myself, I guess.
Return to Innocence by Enigma? No.
Oh,
Return
yeah.
of the Mac by Mark Morrison?
No, let's do Return to Innocence. Let's do it. That's a way better choice than I was going to do, so let's do that.
All right, cool. Well, see you guys next time.
Bye.
Bye.
The return to innocence.